through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We said at the top of the show that we're going to try to answer the question, how did the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020? By the way, if you text in or you call in or you tweet us and you say, oh, you got to score more points than the other team, you're not allowed to participate.
I also promise you that 40 other people are saying the same thing. It's like I told you guys, if you're going to be sassy, be original.
Yeah.
Because it's like when I worked at the zoo, every single person makes a joke about leaving your kids in the monkey cages. You think it's funny, but the person working the counter, as I did in the year 2011, has heard it 40 times that day.
What joke is that?
It's one of two jokes. It's say it's like a father and like a wife with two kids. It's can I get one adult and three kids, winking, because like he's the extra kid. And then the other one, the other joke that people always make is, hey, we're going to get our tickets. And you mind if we leave these two in the monkey cages? And every single time you have to laugh, and then they walk away, and you're like, ugh.
I'm looking at everybody, and everybody's laughing except for C-Raj, because he's probably like, come on, man, that's wow, a really good joke.
Yeah.
It's pretty not a good joke.
Stealing from
it's
my
not a good
there.
Joke when it's the middle of the summer, and it's hot, and you hate your job, and every other... How did you not hear the person in front of you in line say that?
That's a crowd pleaser.
Guys, I was just looking at my Instagram. My wife posts on Instagram with her stories, and Jackson today, he has... YMCA class. It's a sports class. So every day he's got every Wednesday he's learning a new sport to play. Today is basketball. And I'm looking through these videos. And I'm a super proud father.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Jackson's three, but they're learning how to dribble. And he's dribbling, and they just eats it right into the court.
Oh, no.
Brutal.
So I'm going to actually tell this story the way that Jake did during the break, which was to show us the video and say, look at this kid. Look at him. That's so embarrassing. And I said, Jake, that's a child. And he said, it's my child.
That's right. That's why I can say
that's
it.
That's my child.
That's my child.
He's got to learn how to overcome adversity, though, Jake, just like you did.
Come on. Dribble a basketball.
He fell on
come
his
on,
face.
You're three.
I mean,
we got to be dunking already. We've got to be dribbling through the legs. We're behind.
I've watched Pistol Pete Maravich's tape on dribbling.
That's
tonight.
Right.
So glad my parents weren't athletes. It's like, Stacey, you ran up a hill. Good job. Look at you. Legs like a deer.
You guys agree with my question from before, the premise of it, that Patrick Mahomes has something that Russell Wilson doesn't?
But in what terms? I agree that he
think
does.
Think of just skill on the field. Think of on the field.
No.
Because I think that's what people
don't
mean.
Be specific.
Okay.
Like, the less specific you are, the better. Just if you were hang gliding over all football fields at once, and you look down on all of them, you see Patrick Mahomes doing his thing, there's just something about him that shines brighter than Russell Wilson. What is that thing?
Maybe for us, to me, when I look at this, it's very simple in my mind. It is Patrick Mahomes has a tremendous offensive skill set like Russell Wilson, but is in a totally different offense that gets to shine and flash those every single week.
So if Russell and him switched uniforms and Russell were 24 years old still, where he could still move. Hold on. I want to make this point because I think it's important.
Yeah.
If you're saying that Russell and Patrick Mahomes' skills relative to their age were equal,
mm-hmm,
then what you're telling me is that Russell Wilson was robbed of a career that he could have had.
No, I'm not saying that because I think that he landed... I mean, how can I say that when he's been to two Super Bowls and he's had tremendous success?
Well, he lost one of them. He won another, not because of him, because of his defense. He never really got to have... I'm just seeing this scenario through.
Mm-hmm.
He never got to have the quarterbacking career that Patrick Mahomes is having and will continue to have because of the system he's in.
From a statistical standpoint, sure. But I look at it,
more
and
than that.
From that standpoint, it's statistical. It is from a reputation standpoint, right? the team is revolved around Patrick Mahomes. So from that standpoint, you are absolutely right that when Russell won in 2013 and the Seahawks won, it was not Russell being the focal point and, see, this is the reason why they won. It was the defense. And Patrick Mahomes today is the reason why that Kansas City won their Super Bowl. But that is because this system for the Kansas City Chiefs is a quarterback-centric system. They do it in terms of the weapons. Their number one tight end, Travis Kelce, you don't want to see him in run blocking. They keep him off the field. He is a pass blocker, or he's a pass catcher through and through, and everything is built around the passing game. So to me, that is the biggest difference between the two guys, because I think they have very similar skill sets. They have incredible they have an incredible clutch gene. And I think what Patrick Mahomes, if you say one thing that he does on the field that Russell doesn't do, is these no-look passes. Like, to me, that's the signature thing of Patrick Mahomes that separates him from Russell Wilson. Now, is that like the, okay, they're right here and that makes him the better quarterback? Not in my mind, but in terms of a signature, that's probably the only thing. And outside of that, I think it's the offensive schemes that they play in that really change the narrative from a national standpoint, in my opinion.
I think Mahomes has maybe a stronger arm by a bit, but I think Russell overall has a better deep ball. Like, the way he just kind of lets it fall in feels very effortless and feels like it, you know what I mean? Like, Mahomes, it feels like, can throw it out of a stadium. Russ, it feels like you look back at that throw that Garoppolo missed on third down with a minute 40, third down with a minute 40 left, and you think, I think Russ could have hit that like 10 out of 10 times. He's just that good with the deep ball. I think sometimes Mahomes kind of flicks the ball in a way that makes it look very effortless, but both, Brock pointed this out yesterday, both guys are from baseball backgrounds, and I think it makes their delivery sometimes really interesting.
They look like shortstops.
Sometimes
the ball
they do.
Over the second
and
base.
I think in the way that Mahomes, some of the fun with watching him is the way that he makes it look so effortless. The way that Russell Wilson is always so elusive is what originally drew people to him so early in his career and made him like a, you know, Russell Wilson works his magic. I mean, that's still, I think, part of Russell Wilson's brand as a player, is that ability to work magic in a different way than Mahomes does. With Mahomes, it's making a throw from a weird angle that looks like he couldn't have made. Mm-hmm. With Russell Wilson, it's turning what should have been three sure sacks into, you know, a 40-yard completion. And so in different ways, I think they excel in ways that are rare for quarterbacks and you don't often see. And I think that's why a lot of folks call for Russell Wilson to be in a more either explosive offense. Pete Carroll does like explosive plays in an offense, but in an offense that lets him throw more, because I do think people honestly wonder, what would a guy like Russell Wilson with his abilities look like in Andy Reid's offense or Eric Bieniemy, you know, for his offensive coordinator? What would that look like? And I think it's still a good fit in Seattle, but I am also of the group that would be curious to see what Russell Wilson's skill set would look like.
I was going to say about Tyreek Hill, anybody who has him as a weapon, I think, is going to look more electric than they actually are. Like, Patrick Mahomes, his skills are one thing, but there's something about the combination of his no-look passes or keeping a play alive and flicking it to Tyreek Hill and watching him do his thing. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like Tyreek Hill is the motorcycle that Patrick Mahomes rides on. You know, like, if Russell Wilson had that in his offense, it would make him look that much better too.
Tyreek Hill is a unique player. But what I also say is that Andy Reid does use Tyreek Hill in various unique and dynamic ways. And for Tyler Lockett, for DK Metcalf, I think DK can grow into this superstar frontline type of receiver as he continues to grow. But that's also put on the offensive coordinator and Brian Schottenheimer to continue to evolve and find different ways to get Tyler Lockett the ball, to get DK Metcalf the ball in the sense and creative like Andy Reid and his offensive staff have used Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman, all those guys. And I think that's a huge part of it. So
what about them personally? Russ
yeah.
is always – look, Russ is – he's always been the straight ahead, you know, give you the answers that you want. He's – He's veered out of that a little bit more recently, but, you know, there's his family situation, who he's married to. That should all work in his favor. Patrick Mahomes isn't really there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his personality is great, but I don't know what about his personality is more marketable than Russell's so
Mahomes.
Far. Yeah. He just seems like a nice kid.
Well, he is. And I think Russell, from the standpoint, I mean, he's very, very marketable, very much sought after from a lot of aspects. But when you look at Mahomes, I think the one thing, if you say the differentiating factor, is Russell is very clean cut. You know exactly what you're going to get with Russell Wilson. Patrick Mahomes right now in the parade is chugging beers now.
Well, like technically he's dumping them down Travis Kelce's
throat.
He did both, and
I think it's funny.
He's doing both. He's pouring them down his teammates' throats, and he's also chugging them himself. There's just I think for Mahomes, there's this not that there's this bad boy reputation by any stretch of the imagination, but I think more relatable from the standpoint that it's like, oh, I do that.
Yeah, I think he seems fun. He acts like
I would do that if I were him. Not me personally. I don't drink or any of that stuff, but I think that most people look at that and say that's fun. It's more relatable. Whereas to Russell is obviously very, you know, clean cut in pretty much every aspect of his life.
You done a keg stand lately, Stacey?
No. I've never done one before.
Kind of overrated. Four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Ha. I was at a Super Bowl party in 2011, actually, standing outside the door, and these two guys were begging me.
To do a keg stand.
And instead, I just left the party.
You just left it.
I said, the heck with this. I'm getting out of here.
You missed out on a moment, Tom. That could have made you the life of the party.
No.
That could have been life-changing.
I was over that.
You would be a much different Tom Wassel today
would,
than
no
you
doubt
are
about
now.
It. What scheme changes are you expecting the Seahawks defense are going to make in 2020?
The very obvious scheme change, I think people are concerned about if this group is going to continue to stay with the base defense, and I just don't think they are. I don't think they have the personnel to do it. And I think that after evaluating this year, they're going to want to get back to nickel personnel. And the reason why is two things. Talk about personnel. Michael Kendrick's torn ACL. He's not going to be with your team for the majority of the year if you end up signing him back. So that's one. I don't think Cody Barton is an every down type of guy at Sam linebacker. I think he's a much better Will linebacker rotating in and out with KJ Wright. So then you've also had Pete Carroll talk about Ugo Amadi and how he wished he would have played him sooner. I think that comes to fruition as you go through this year. The last thing of a reason why I believe that is going to change is because it allows your defensive ends to actually be on the edge, and instead of having to have so much responsibility in the run game and play gap responsibilities, you're more free and open to rush the passer and to be more creative and ad-lib in your running game responsibilities, which fits Jadeveon Clowney a heck of a lot better than what they were doing this year.
Second down. Stacey, what were you up to yesterday? Were you making,
like, in general?
Were you making fun of the 49ers yesterday?
No, yesterday, Kyle Brown played us a montage of some calls into a San Francisco sports talk radio station.
Sad.
It was really sad, and there was sad music in the background, and I wasn't at all making fun of the 49ers. I think it's a bummer, and the Seahawks have been there before, where you're the day after a loss in a game you thought they should have won, and you're thinking, what went wrong so last minute? Like, this game felt one way for, you know, 59 minutes of game time, and then another way. But then I felt bad. Because I always feel bad about things. And I read an article, it was in The Ringer, and it was talking about how close Kyle Shanahan was to this kind of perfect season that he'd put together. And everything was pointing to them doing the right thing, doing it the right way, and on paper, being just a more consistent and better team throughout the season. Obviously, that fell apart when they allowed 21 points from the Chiefs in the fourth quarter. But there was a specific quote it was in that article, and it was from 35-year-old left tackle Joe Staley. It was his post-game, post-Super Bowl press conference where he's giving these kind of one-word answers. He's really upset, and then he kind of pauses for a second, and he says, sorry, and he says, quote, you put your heart and soul in your entire life into trying to win a Super Bowl or trying to be a Super Bowl champion, and you get toward the end of your career, and you realize how rare these opportunities are. The emotions are still raw and real for me right now. Put yourself in my shoes for a second. It's tough. And I did kind of have this moment of reflection thinking, you know what? Joe Staley will have been one of the better left tackles in the NFL who has now been to two Super Bowls and lost both Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough. And he's thinking now in this moment, I might not be back here. I'm 35 years old, and that's really hard. And there are players on, right, on every team that you look to, and you think, this guy might only have this season or one more season. And you're thinking, both times, I was so close to doing it. You think of the injuries he's had, the surgeries he's been through, and I think that there's just a moment of reflection, especially for those older players, when you really do realize how hard it is to get to a Super Bowl.
God, you think about how rare it is.
How rare and just how
to
difficult.
Just to be able to be in the NFL for a couple of years, let alone, say, 12 or 13, mm-hmm. and then you're one of the players who's lucky enough to be a part of one Super
Twice.
Bowl, let alone two. And then you lose both. That is torture.
It's awful.
It is.
It is torture.
I just had a moment of reflection and respect for Joe Staley yesterday.
Both times they're up. I feel for Joe Staley in terms of that and the human side of it. But there also is the Seahawk fan in me that Joe Staley has had a lot of choice words about the Seattle Seahawks. So seeing the 49ers go down, it doesn't really hurt me too bad.
Third down.
Jake's just so young. He doesn't understand.
Did Staley say it to your face?
He hasn't looked 30 in the face yet.
You're right. I haven't.
No.
Haven't quite hit that yet.
No.
Until it does, I'll have all this wisdom and
turning
reflection.
Turning 29 this year,
like
though.
You, Stacey.
You're getting into your final year, Jake. Enjoy it while it lasts.
If D-line is everyone's main priority, Jake, then how do they go about filling that need?
There really becomes a question about where do you spend your free agent dollars in terms of your salary cap, and where do you go after it in the draft? And to me, there is without question, you have to go and get two legitimate pass rushers in the free agent market. Then from there, your defensive tackles, that's the decision that you have to end up making. Do you end up paying Jaron Reed? Do you pay Quentin Jefferson? Those are decisions that you have to make for yourself. Because I do believe that the interior, your defensive tackles, can be put together and put together a really good, solid defensive line with older veteran type of defensive tackles. You need young, twitchy guys on the edge to be able to get after the passer. So if you're asking me money breakdown and capital spent, it would be most of your money spent on the edges, your pass rush, defensive ends, and then you're finding more bargain type of deals on the interior for your defensive tackles.
Yeah, your Red Bryants, your Alan Branch, or whoever.
Yep, exactly.
Fourth down. How do you go about determining what positions the Seahawks should go after through free agency versus the draft?
There's
a big, big difference.
There's a huge difference, and there are certain positions that you look at and say traditionally you have a really hard time making transitions from one position to the other. I think defensive end, and from a Seahawks perspective, as we've looked at this, drafting a defensive lineman early and expecting him to produce results is a very, very difficult task. That is something that you want to try and stay away from, in my opinion. You want to go and get proven talent there. Offensive line, unless you're picking and you feel like you have tremendous value dropping down to you in the second round, which is where I believe their first pick is going to come from, you usually want to go and shore up something in the free agent market at guard or tackle, which is one of those positions for them that they've got to decide on what they're going to invest in. And then from there, I think Russell Wilson has shown you that he can take a young, talented, legitimately talented player in DK Metcalf and can help them grow and progress throughout an offseason, take them under their wing, and make them into really good superstar players. So when you talk about prioritizing, I think you have to factor in all those different things for each position. That's going to be critical moving forward. What do you need proven talent to produce now, and what do you feel you're comfortable with that you think can happen from the draft that can make an immediate impact in year one?
You know, we were talking to Sauk before, and he listed his priorities. I think his pass rush, D-line, and then maybe a playmaking safety or corner. Where does Marquise Blair fit into all this?
It's a great question.
Because he was supposed to come in last year and be that guy at safety by mid-year. And yeah. For whatever reason, he wasn't in – he fell out of favor with Pete, or he was slow to learn the system or something. Something kept him from starting that game and even making frequent appearances in the games he did.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Well, the Seahawks originally – Jake, I'll let you take this one for just a random note from the Seahawks and what they said – was that, like L.J. Collier, he suffered an injury. I forgot what it was. Was it an ankle or a hamstring? Maybe a hamstring in training camp, and that he just had a slower development as a result of that injury. So that was the idea that they kept leaning on.
But when he played well.
Yes, and I come back to that whole thing. Every time he was in the game, he made an impact play, whether it was the Atlanta Falcon game, and he made almost – you could argue potentially the game-saving turnover at the goal line. San Francisco 49ers game, it didn't result in a big play, but the impact of knowing that a slant route coming over the middle is going to get smashed. It is going to have a big hit waiting for him from a player like Marquise Blair. His presence, his speed, we talk about needing to add speed and change that. Marquise Blair has that ability to do all of it. And so it's very confusing to me to see a guy like that stay off of the field. The only thing you can think of is the fact that he just did not pick up on the system and that they did not trust him.
But you can't keep on drafting guys like that and keeping them off the field you got to coach him better then.
You have to trust.
You
have to put them out there and you have to give them the reps. And I think that that's a situation that you have to look at and say, instead of being this conservative situation and going, hey, we just don't want any big mistakes, that's what you had with Earl Thomas. You had a guy in his rookie year, a star player who was making plays all over the field, but also gave up some big ones.
Because he was trying too hard
exactly,
to make the
You have to give that type of player experience and comfortability and learning lessons so that they can grow and expand on that. And so I think that the way they handled Marquise Blair this year was puzzling.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how they approach this between him and Bradley McDougal and their nickel defense versus base defense. To me, that's critical.
Yeah, I feel like he's too talented a player either to sit or to trade away, because all you're going to end up doing is trying to draft the next Marquise Blair.
Yes.
And hope that he doesn't get hurt. It doesn't make any sense. Halftime show's next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
I'm going to read from the Yankees PR department Twitter handle here. We don't normally talk about ex-Mariners, but just I thought this one was interesting. Earlier today, lefty James Paxton underwent a microscopic lumbar discectomy with a removal of a paradiscal cyst. The surgery was performed by Dr. Andrew Dorsett in Dallas, Texas. His approximate timeline to return to Major League action is 3 to 4 months.
That's a bummer.
Wow.
Look, I root for James Paxton. I rooted for him when he was here. I got on his case a lot after that one start where against
Oakland, particular one time.
Right, where the Mariners were still in it. They needed him to pitch well, and he pulled himself out of the game in Oakland, didn't even bother fielding that ball. I don't know if I've ever been as upset with one single player as I was that night. Nevertheless, nice guy, good guy. He's just made out of spare parts, that's all there is to it.
Spare parts.
He is. He's never been healthy, and he never will be.
Yeah, that's. I feel so bad for individuals like that. I've had very close friends who very talented players, and obviously not being able to get to the highest level, but even some that do, they just cannot stay healthy, and you just never know what kind of career they would have had they not been so injury prone.
I mean, yeah, it's weird when some players like can just bounce back. Like, I mean, we talk about Patrick Mahomes all day. Patrick Mahomes bouncing back in 2 weeks after dislocating his kneecap. And then there was a report that came out that a doctor was interviewed or something like that, that someone said, well, it's the anatomy of his knee. The fact that he's like double jointed in his knee and like the ligaments for some reason were therefore less likely. Like some people just their bodies are different. I mean, Russell Wilson, another guy that hasn't been injured a lot. And then you have guys like, for any Washington fans, you watch Jake Locker get to Tennessee and just couldn't play a full season. And it was like every single time something happened to him and you just thought, God, this guy is so snake bitten and it sucks because he's such a nice guy.
Where does toughness fall in there? Because that night or that morning where I got on Paxton's case, I was essentially calling him out for not being a tough enough athlete. Now, maybe he is and maybe he isn't, but some guys aren't.
Some guys,
you know, they get a little scrape and they say, oh, sorry, take me out. 100 out of 100 players are not so tough that they don't ask out of a game on occasion.
That's true, although most are. And I'm coming from a football perspective where I think that there's almost, well, I don't know. I mean, I would assume that there's more pressure to tough it out in a football environment just because
probably
it's just the nature of the sport itself, although there are a lot of really tough and admirable baseball players. But yeah, even then, it's hard to think of more than a handful of players who you think, oh, he removed himself when he didn't have to.
Right.
Usually it's like you play through some gruesome injuries. Well, I'd be out for months.
And there are guys that you look at and say, well, one guy sat out this long for an injury and one guy played through it, right? There's a difference in terms of, you know, pain tolerance and also, like you said, toughness. And I think that that's a big part of it. So when you look at guys like Patrick Mahomes, you look at Russell Wilson, I mean, you talk about tough. I mean, there are a lot of things that ended up happening in Russell's career, playing through injuries. You know, some that you know, some that you don't know. That, I mean, this guy just, he refuses not to play. Like, he will, it's going to have to take something catastrophic for him not to be on the field.
All right, at the top of the show, we introduced our Super Bowl blueprint. How can the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020? There's going to be a handful of opportunities where they're going to be able to alter their roster. It could be through maintaining their own free agents, keeping them around, spending in NFL free agency, or, of course, building through the draft once again. Our plan leading up to each one of these dates on the calendar here for those three events is to provide profiles of every player involved that we think can help the Seahawks at 2:00 every single day, starting next week?
Starting Monday, but then starting today at 2 p.m., we're going to kind of open up our conversation and we're going to talk about our ideas just on air because we were talking about them in a closed door meeting and then we were like, let's just dish it out on air and figure out what we want our blueprint to be. So we'll also be taking your guys' calls at 2. You can call 206-421-3776. That'll be at 2 p.m. And it'll be the same conversation. How do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? And if you have an idea we'd love, we might borrow it for our blueprint.
And don't tell us score more points than the other team. You're not funny. Your mom doesn't think you're cute.
Whoa, Tom. My mom thinks I'm cute.
I'm with Tom on this one. Don't waste our time. We're trying to really get down to the blueprint of what this team needs to do. And from that blueprint, we are then going to target the players in free agency that we think that the Seahawks should retain from their own roster, what they should try and get from the free agent market, and then who they should draft. So this is serious, guys. This is very serious.
Don't waste our time. I'm more worried about our audience, like the other people in the audience. All right, and we have a new feature being added to our lineup tonight. The Seattle Dragons Insider Show starts tonight. It's between 7 and 8 p.m., and that's going to be hosted by
Lydia Cruz.
Now,
yes.
I haven't talked to Lydia about this yet, but I don't know anything about the Seattle Dragons, the new XFL team. I assume she must know something because she's hosting a show on them.
That's why we got to tune in tonight.
Yeah, that's why you got to listen at 7. She'll get you ready. Everything. If you know nothing about the XFL or if you know quite a bit about it, either way, tune in, 7 p.m., 710 ESPN Seattle. Lydia Cruz will get you ready for the XFL inaugural game for the Seattle Dragons. That's this Saturday.
I can't wait. Honestly, I'm really excited about this. I'm excited to see what this offense looks like under Jim Zorn, what it looks like under Mike Riley. I mean, those between those two guys. That's some pretty good offensive knowledge, and you're going to see some interesting talent in terms of locally, Kaysen Williams, my former high school teammate. Excited to see him out there and show that he could still play at a high level. Keenan Reynolds. There's a lot of good local talent, good mix, and just also from a standpoint of guys that have played with Seattle as well. So it'll be fun to see how it all comes together.
Like Jake, I know a lot of these people also.
Who's the quarterback?
The quarterback
is BJ?
It's BJ Daniels and Brandon Silvers. Oh, okay. Now, they haven't announced who the starter will be. It's also going to be interesting to see if they roll with one guy or if they play both guys and see if they, you know, give them a half. I don't know what the outlook is going to be on that, but Brandon Silvers was essentially the Seattle Dragons' first round pick. He was their first overall pick, and I would anticipate that he has the leg up in the competition, but hey, you never know.
You know, they were talking to Oliver Luck this morning on Get Up, Mike Greenberg's show, and they asked him who are some players we should look out for.
Mm-hmm.
And he named three. He said Landry Jones was one, Cardale Jones was another.
Oh, I forgot he's there.
You know who the third one was?
Kaysen?
Nope. It's a former pass catcher for the Seattle Seahawks.
Keenan Reynolds?
Nope. It's a guy we looked at last preseason. He's got a really cool name.
Jazz Ferguson.
Jazz Ferguson.
Really?
Yeah, he's Oliver Luck's guy to watch.
Every other text during the Seahawks rookie camp, especially after roster cutdowns, was, when's Jazz Ferguson coming back?
Yeah, right.
Every roster move. Was it so they could add Jazz Ferguson? Yeah.
Speaking of fun names to say, that was Jackson's favorite name. He heard Jazz Ferguson during the preseason. Aww. He laughed so hard and would not stop saying his name.
Because his name sounds kind of like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe because fun. He knows that Jazz Ferguson would never make fun of him for falling over during basketball practice.
Yeah, it builds toughness. Okay. But what we did find out was that it wasn't Jackson's clumsiness. It was actually, after further review, one girl lost her control of the basketball. The ball rolls into Jackson's leg as he's trying to dribble.
Yeah.
It was sabotage.
Okay.
Let's call it what it was.
Thank you.
Straight up sabotage. It was heartless, and it reflected poorly on Jackson when it shouldn't have.
Exactly.
And remind me again, did you know that when you initially laughed at him for falling over?
I did not laugh at my son falling over, Stacey, okay? You just make me sound like a terrible human being.
Well,
apologize. Now we'll move on.
No. Okay. I apologize to Brooke and Brooke alone.
Wait. Tom will pull this car right
over. We will wait.
I'll sit here until I get an apology.
Just in silence?
I may or may not be lying.
You're not
Stacey
leaving this
might
table
until
you eat your vegetables.
Why hasn't Vince McMahon been publicly involved in this whole XFL thing? Plus, what's Patrick Mahomes up to today? Like, literally, what's he doing? We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
I still don't understand this whole XFL as a venture for Vince McMahon.
Okay.
We haven't seen him at all, like, at the forefront of this. He hasn't said anything. We haven't seen his face on anything. You, Stacey, suggested that maybe that's a strategic thing because before it was too much Vince McMahon 20 years ago in 2001, and now it's like none of him to give the league a little bit of credibility. But here, when it comes down to it, when you start up a football league, the point of starting any business venture is to make money. How much money does Vince McMahon honestly think he's going to make on this league?
It just depends. I for year one, I think anybody looking at this, and I think the XFL has approached this saying, in year one, our profits are probably not going to be huge. It's not going to be a massive thing, and that's why they came into this situation knowing that it was probably going to take a three-year investment of over, I believe it was $500 million, anywhere between $350 million to $500 million of an investment on the XFL on Vince McMahon's part, to be able to make sure that this XFL league had the best chance of success and sustainability. If they can If they get the football audience to buy into this league in the spring and that they know it's going to be around, I think this town in Seattle these other football towns and markets are going to be excited about the ability to watch games in the spring and see potential prospects that can get themselves back into the NFL.
I think Vince McMahon is doing this for one reason, his ego. He screwed it up one time, and I think he really wants to have his name on a successful football project, and he's coming back at it from a different angle this time, hoping it'll work. Investing in a startup football league, I mean, think about every other football league. There's the World League of Football. There's been the USFL. Mm-hmm. There's been the AAF. None of them worked. The USFL worked for about 3 years. Was, I guess if you want to call that a success, 3 years and out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that sound like the type of business that's a good business to invest $500 million into?
Although I will say it's the not. XFL, in a way that the AAF tried to be, sounds like it's trying to work, not with or for, but work in tandem with the NFL in a way that those other leagues might have failed to do, which is we're going to work as much as we can and showcase players that you might be interested in signing by going opposite their training schedule and the dates, by making those players players that coaches and scouts of NFL teams can see and can potentially sign.
But how do they make money?
Well, I think they're going to lose money initially.
Well, okay, but how long is it going to take to make money? 10 years? 15 years? That's just a weird... Vince McMahon is in like his mid to late 70s. It's a weird business for him to invest this much money in for a guy his age. It doesn't make any sense.
You're right. It is probably based off of the first driving factor is his ego, the fact that it did fail. And I do agree with that, that he is looking at this and saying, hey, we're going to approach this differently. I want to see this succeed because I see that there is a market and an opportunity for this to exist. And I think the word that you're looking for, Stacey, is they're not competing
right.
against the NFL. All the other leagues tried to compete against the NFL. The AAF was a good design. It's very similar to the XFL. The difference was they had no money. They were trying to, they were scheming and they were looking for money and they were, you know,
as Curtis described it, the fire fest of professional sports.
Yeah. The perfect correlation to that. They were trying to convince everybody that they were this entity that they were not because they had zero money and conning everybody as they went. The XFL has the money. They have the backing. They have the legitimacy of that. Now it's, can you put a product out there that people can follow, be a fan of, and can you go through a full season of it being a success? That part is going to be critical for the XFL if they want to have any future moving forward. And also, you have to look at it too and saying that there is a potential after year one that you might have more college guys, or I don't think they have any, but you might have college guys that say, hey, I'm going to jump away from college football and I'm going to go play in the XFL. And I think if that ended up happening, then you're going to seriously get some intrigue.
And from Wrestling Observer Radio, they did an interview. Dave Meltzer said that the plan for McMahon might be, rather than to make money off of the league itself, that he'll sink a lot of profits. He estimates he's probably going to lose $375 million in the first couple years, but that the plan is that he can get television deals that cover those losses, and that the long-term plan is turning it into a successful television contract negotiation in, say, like 2, 3, 4 years.
What was that, Wrestling Radio? Was that...
It's Dave Meltzer.
He's like the Adrian Wojnarowski of the WWE.
It's a melt bomb.
It's a melt bomb.
Melt bomb.
Yeah. Gonna melt your face.
A frequent listener.
Melt your
Downloads
face off.
Downloads the podcast, streams on demand.
So he's going to get TV deals to cover all of his losses and hope that there's enough interest in this league it'll stay afloat.
Exactly. This is his quote. The way it's structured is that Vince is probably going to lose $375 million on this league, and he will. And he knows that, and that's what he's going to do. And at the end of those 3 years, the idea is that he will be able to get television deals that will total over $125 million a year, which will cover his losses, and then he's okay. And he says, blah, blah, blah. If these stations feel it's valuable to pay that much, it's not as long of a shot as everyone thinks.
I don't know. I just...
The skepticism is obviously going to be there.
Look,
right?
I'm happy for any football player who wants to be playing football and can be paid to do it. I think it's a really cool thing. I mean, I wish that the AAF would have worked. I wish that they all worked, because I want anybody who wants to play football for a living to be employed doing it. I just don't know that there's the interest on the part of the American sports fan, even the football fan. I feel like we need a break. I mean, the NFL controls so much of our sports fandom. Don't we need a break at some point from football? Do you really need more?
It just depends on if the talent is intriguing enough.
I guess.
If the talent isn't intriguing.
Do I really want to watch Landry Jones play football?
Not really. If I don't think he has any shot at getting back into the NFL, there's not really a huge intrigue for me there. If there are other guys in the league that I feel have a great chance and that the XFL can show that they can produce guys like that, then it does intrigue me. And I'm looking at a league that says, okay, these can be future stars. And all the while, I can be entertained with this league and this new style and format at the same time. So they are going to have to do a lot of building of goodwill before this league actually becomes profitable, makes money, and is sustainable for any long-term future.
I give it 1 year.
I'll give it a three. I think they've got a chance to.
I mean, that sounds like the magic number that if they can get to three, they feel like they can get a. They have a good shot at some TV deals.
How many weeks is their season?
I believe it's 10 weeks.
Yeah, it's 10 weeks plus playoffs.
By week three, yeah. Stadiums are empty.
I don't know.
They already have like 20,000 plus tickets sold for the first Seattle Dragons home game, which is next Saturday, Sunday, the 15th, I think.
Yeah, which is awesome. And I anticipate that the Seattle fan base is going to be awesome. For the Seattle Dragons and for them to pick Seattle as a location, they could not have picked a better city, in my opinion, for a spring league. I think that this will be popular in this town, and I anticipate that those tickets and the attendance will stay strong throughout the year.
How do you fix the Seahawks? Season. How do we get them into the Super Bowl? What should their priorities be this offseason? We're taking your calls next, 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. That's next. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.